If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
You just found the most downloaded fitness, health, and entertainment podcast. This is Mind Pump. In today's episode, we had listeners write in some questions. We picked some and we answer them. But this was after the intro. Today's intro was 53 minutes long. In the intro, we talk about fitness studies, fat loss, muscle gain, family life. It's a good time. By the way, if you want to write in a question, go to Instagram, do it at Mind Pump Media, and then we might pick it. This episode is brought to you by some sponsors. The first one is Legion. Today, we talked about their brand new HMB supplement. If you want to try it or others, go to buylegion.com. That's BYLEGION.com/mindpump. Use the code MindPump, get 20% off. This episode is also brought to you by Organifi. Today, we talked about their Shilajit gummies. If you want to try those out or some of their other supplements, go to Organifi.com. That's Organifi.com/mindpump. Use the code MindPump, get 20% off. We also have a sale this month. The Shredded Summer Bundle of Workout Programs and the Bikini Bundle of Workout Programs, 50% off. If you're interested, go to mapsfitnessproducts.com and then use the code JUNE50 for the discount. All right, here comes the show. All right, we're going to talk about six controversial muscle building and fat burning tips that the data might not necessarily support, but we support it, and we'll break it down and why. Let's go.
Let's hear it.
Let's go.
First one is fasted cardio.
Yes.
Fasted cardio.
One of my favorite.
Yeah, you know, so bodybuilders have been doing this forever, where they'll advise, you know,
because it works,
pre-contest. They'll advise, you know, their clients or whatever to wake up and do cardio first thing in the morning, or exercise first thing in the morning without any food. Now, the theory was that if you didn't have any food in your system, that your body would have to tap into fat stores, in order to fuel the activity. So they'd say, okay, it's going to burn more body fat. And they've been doing this for decades. Now, we have studies that compare fasted cardio to fed cardio. And it is true that fasted cardio increases fat oxidation. You can actually measure that. But the end result is not more fat loss, right? So fat oxidation doesn't matter because at the end of the day, it's like how much body fat that I actually lose. So the studies say doesn't work. Here's the deal though. It does work. Yeah. I don't think it works for the reasons they thought, but it does work. And I've used this with many, many clients when appropriate, and it's an effective strategy.
Yeah, I would still include this, even though this probably gets a lot of hate and heat and has made tons of Instagram viral clips. I would chalk this one up to a win for the bodybuilders. We did a terrible job. I include myself in that category of communicating the science around it. So we didn't.
Always where they screw up.
Yeah, right. Exactly. We don't do the best at communicating exactly what's going on with scientifically. But what you do know is if you've been doing that for a long time, like as far as like you've done a lot of shows, you've trained a lot of people for shows, you've had to get, and when you have to get in shape like that, where you have a very specific time frame, there is not a lot of room for error and mistakes. Right. And so, you know, you have this group of people, talking about bodybuilders, that have been using this method for a very long time and has had tremendous success with it. And so this idea that, you know, the science community came in and said, oh, what they've been saying is all wrong and false and not true. And then so many people discontinuing that because they thought it was a terrible idea is like, no, it's not that simple. There's more going on. And what I think the way I communicated to my clients, that at least what I found was, you know, if I set my alarm to get up an hour earlier to do fasted cardio, I consistently got up an hour or more earlier than I ever would. And not only did I get up, but I got up and I got up and I did activity.
Right.
Where if I actually looked at like a typical day, like even today, like a typical day for me is like get up, I kind of get up leisurely, shower, have some breakfast and a coffee, get in a car, drive, come here, sit. Mm-hmm. I mean, the most activity I get is by noon or one, we take our first walk outside. Whereas let's say I would decide like, hey, I want to lean out right now, so I'm going to start fasted cardio. Simply me just setting the alarm an hour earlier and doing that, starting that would not only get that activity going significantly, but then I also noticed another thing happened. I became more active throughout the rest of the day. And so you can't account for that. You got to account for that also as beneficial too.
Yeah. So what happened was, like you said, Adam, where the mistake was is bodybuilders tried to explain the science behind why this worked. And so they had a logical direction. I thought that it was that's a logical place to go. It's like, okay, well, you don't have as much glycogen, no food. Yeah. You're going to burn more body fat. And that's the direction
the energy from. It kind of makes a lot
of
sense.
That's right. And so what the scientists did is they said, all right, let's control the variables. Let's control activity and calories and see if it makes a difference if someone does cardio fasted or fed. And in that case, it makes no difference. Now, here's the deal. The real world is not controlled like that. In the real world, the biggest factor that you need to consider is human behavior. Period, end of story. Trainers know this. Coaches know this. Like the thing that I need to consider when I'm trying to help somebody get leaner, build muscle, get more fit, is their behavior. That's more important than any other factor. And here's what happens. I'll back you up. When I had clients do fasted cardio, their overall activity was just higher.
Yep.
When I had people do fasted cardio, they actually had better habits throughout the day.
Yep.
Because they started with this pursuit of fitness first thing. And when they did that first thing, it actually affected their diet. It affected the rest of their activity. It gave them more energy throughout the day.
Probably went to sleep a bit earlier.
That's right.
Got better sleep.
That's right. So really the reason why this works is not because in a lab controlled environment, all things being equal, it's superior. It's because fasted cardio tends to lead to other behaviors or overall activity that's higher, which is better for overall fat loss. And in the real world, that's what matters. Yeah. In the real world, what matters is human behavior. Is this going to contribute to your goal in a general way? Does this make a difference in a totally controlled environment, which we don't live in?
Well, I'm going to add another one on here because it's not on your list. And it reminds me of this. And that was the tip to don't eat past 6 o'clock and you'll lose body fat. You'll burn body fat. And the way we explained it, of what's happening, again, very similar. It's like, oh, your body doesn't have any calories, and then it taps into fat stores all night long, and so it's burning all these extra calories. So the way that the science was presented was all wrong. But what we have found through training tons of people and giving this as a tip is that when do people tend to make the worst decisions eating-wise?
After 6.
After 6 p.m. Yeah, dude. They eat after dinner. That's when they have the ice cream, the pie, the snacks, the popcorn, the get up. You know, that's when you get up.
So you just cut it out.
Yeah, so you just cut that out by eliminating the last meal at 6 o'clock. And because of that, and then to your point, Justin, that probably also improved sleep because they weren't eating right before bed. And so better digestion. Mm-hmm, and so there was a whole host of downstream effects that happened from that great piece of advice. And this was another thing that we came and shit all over with the science community and said, that's not true. This is not what the science says. Yet those of us that have been training people for a long time have observed the behaviors around that tip. And so this is an area that I love topics like this because I think these types of things, when I look back of mistakes that I made as a trainer, when I learned the science, but, oh, that's all bullshit. And then I go back and I go, you know what though, but it was such a helpful tip for so many people.
That's right.
Simple.
Yeah.
That I'm not giving them a bunch of boundaries and rules. Right. It's like, hey, you can have what you want. I'm not going to tell you what not.
I care about what works as a trainer. I care about what works in the real world. Sorry to put it more clearly. And fasted cardio for a lot of people, not appropriate for everybody, right? If someone's getting bad sleep or they hate doing it, like I'm not going to do this. But when it's appropriate, is fasted cardio more effective than fed cardio for people? It was. Mm-hmm. It was because it typically meant they moved more in general throughout the whole day, and it changed the rest of their behaviors. Period, end of story. Next up is the mind-to-muscle connection controversy. Now, there's studies out there that'll show that, you know, they'll have these group of people do a bench press and just press the weight, and then these group over here do a bench press and try to target the pecs more. And what the data will show with EMG analysis is that they're not activating their pecs anymore. They're not getting more chest muscle fibers activated by concentrating on feeling the pecs. This, again, is stupid. First off, I don't care what an EMG says.
Yeah.
EMGs are, they're not the end result. I'm looking at what actually changes the end result, which is muscle gain. But even if you forget all that for a second, it is far better for somebody to try to feel the exercise than not. Like making someone more present and connected helps overall, especially beginners. Like if I get a beginner and I'm training them and I'm trying to get them to feel a muscle, what ends up typically happening is their form changes a little bit in a more favorable way, rather than just not doing. Now, the other option is just perfect the technique, which is great. I love that as well. It's also very valuable. But focusing on the muscle allows you to change the technique in ways that does allow you to target the muscle a little bit better. So I'd like to see end result studies on this, because mind to muscle connection has been communicated forever and ever by bodybuilders. And this is how I trained people in many instances, especially when we're trying to feel a particular target muscle or a quote unquote weak body part.
Yeah, but there, we do have studies though, Sal, that do support like your ability muscle to recruit more from an area, being able by mentally focusing.
That's the controversy, right? They'll do EMG studies and say you're not. They'll say, oh, it's the same activation.
Because of the power of the contraction?
Yeah. Like,
so that's interesting because, I mean, do they look at the surface area, like in terms of like how far it spans out?
I think they're limited. I really do. Yeah, the way you would do a study like this is you would have twins train and then, you know, train them differently and have to control every single damn variable. Well, good luck.
I know, but do either of you even really need that? Because, okay, I can.
No, I don't.
Yeah, I would tell you guys, let's take an
good
example of where you can really manipulate this. And a close grip bench press is an example to me. Early on in my career, I would do it and I would feel all on my shoulders, right? Mm-hmm. And then when I really understood mind muscle connection, I can keep that all in my triceps.
That's right.
And so I took a movement, and I know soreness is not the best indicator of exercise working or not working, but I take a movement that I used to do and my shoulders would get really sore, to where now my shoulders never get sore and only my triceps get sore. And so I can feel it while I'm doing it. It's very clear to me what's being activated and what's moving the bar more, because both play a role in that movement. But if I really focus on utilizing my triceps, I could really use
it. I don't think an EMG can really measure effort very, very well. I mean, and this is something I was tripping out a long time when I was trying to create that stick that measured, pressure. Mm-hmm. And like, cause it was pretty good about like, if you could drive, you know, more pressure and tension and recruit more, it would light up and you'd feel more of that force output and you could measure that. Yeah. But in terms of I think it's just very tricky, and it's like you said, it's a very narrow scope that they're looking at. So I don't think it tells the whole picture.
No, and I could change my technique. I could change just the way it feels. I think this is the more advanced you get, the more important this becomes. I could fatigue my lats faster by concentrating them on them during a lat pull down than just by trying to move the weight. I think this is how you become, this is how you develop fitness maturity, is you understand mind to muscle connection in compound lifts. This is a very valuable skill. And I hate these guys that put out these EMG studies, because they're moving people away from something that I think is so valuable. Like,
you need it too for secondary muscles. You need it to be able to, really have control and stability while you're applying max effort, right?
That's right.
Like, and so too, you need to be able to feel your muscles so you can have some sense of anchoring and control.
Well, I've also had countless female clients that came to me trying to develop their butt that were doing the right movements but couldn't connect to the glutes.
That's right.
And the only thing I got them to do was to be able to connect better to the glutes, and then we had butt development.
That's right. Yeah.
They were doing things like deadlifts, like squats, movements that are great for the glute development, but filling it in all the areas. Filling in their quads, filling in their hamstrings, mm-hmm. but not filling it in their butt. Once I got them to better connect by
now,
doing,
all of a sudden it grows.
Yeah,
then all of a sudden they potential.
Yeah, we're doing all the same movements. Yeah,
where's that study?
Right, and so I mean, I don't even care what the argument is here on with the EMG studies. It's like I've seen enough people where I've changed this for them. So I think again, maybe the bodybuilders again did not communicate the science mm-hmm. the best. But yeah. Tremendous value in learning the mind muscle.
Huge value.
Connection. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Next up is fasting. Now, fasting is controversial because there are cases where I think it could be valuable and there are cases where I think it wouldn't be very valuable at all. The places that I think it's valuable are for people who specifically are so tied to food that they're afraid of skipping a meal or missing their planned food. This is a great way for them to develop a better relationship with food. Where is this not necessarily a good thing to use is when people have a past of eating disorders or a past of restricting, in which case fasting is an
extreme option.
Yeah. Fasting in general has been super bastardized in the health and fitness space. Yes, you do lose weight when you don't eat. I don't know why that was suddenly like this remarkable thing that people were like, oh my God, fasting is a great way to lose weight. Like, yeah, you don't eat food. But I don't think that's a great way to burn body fat unless your issue is that you're so connected to food, you're afraid of skipping a meal. That was me. That was me. So when I fasted, for me, it broke those chains and it helped me develop a more healthy relationship with food. Mm-hmm. Next up is priming or pre-exhausting. This is my favorite because they'll that show.
Recent study just came out to try and shit on this, right?
Yeah. It's like if you prime your glutes before squats, it doesn't activate the glutes more. You prime your pecs before a bench press. It doesn't actually, if anything, it fatigues the supporting muscles, you know, more or whatever. That's what the studies will show. Priming or pre-exhausting, again, an old bodybuilding technique, I think is incredibly valuable because it allows the person to modify their technique in a way that does get them to activate those muscles a little more. When I got a woman who couldn't feel her glutes while squatting to prime properly with, let's say, hip bridges and then squat, I could see.
How do you explain a warm-up set?
Yeah. I mean, warming up is just increasing the internal temperature, they would say, right?
Oh, to reduce right. Injury. So there's no neuromuscular recruitment happening. You know, you're not like channeling a sequence.
These studies are so limited.
It's so ridiculous.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And again, I would watch the woman train. We would pre-exhaust or prime. Then we'd do squats and I'd see her technique change.
Yeah.
Because now she knows where to feel because she just, you know, got a little pump in her glutes from the previous, you know, priming exercises.
Totally.
So super valuable. Next up is low carb. Low carb can be quite controversial. A diet that's low carb versus a diet that's moderate or high carb, all calories being controlled, both high protein, in the controlled study showed no additional fat loss. But in some cases, I think low carb is superior. And I think it's superior because when you drop your, when you keep the calories, you know, the same, but you drop your carbs, so your fat goes up, protein's high, it does in many cases, suppress appetite.
Oh, bro.
Oh, yeah.
So it's easier to lose fat on a low carb in my
sense. It tamps down the cravings. Obviously there's a genetic component just like there is in everything. And there is going to be people that maybe don't notice as major of a difference. I was a heavy carb eater. And when I got rid of it, one of the number one things I remember reporting back going like, oh, wow. My appetite is just gone. Like I didn't have the, that's why I remember when we, and if those that have been listening to the podcast as far back as the beginning, when the ketogenic diet was like blowing up, everybody was talking about it. We decided to like experiment with it and do it. And I remember part of the reason why I moved away from it was at that time, again, I was at the height of my bodybuilding and my size and physique. I was having to eat like 5,000 calories a day. And I remember telling you guys, I'm like, I can't do it. Like I cannot get to the calories
without carbs. It just crushes your appetite.
It just crushed my appetite. So I was like, just palate fatigue of protein all day long and fat. I was just like, I don't want any more. I can't possibly do it. And so I was like, man, this is a great diet or a great way to eat. If you are trying to help somebody with cravings and trying to lean out, it's a great strategy for that person.
Now for muscle building, not the best approach and not for athletic performance. But I think for fat loss, this is something that I would always have my clients mess with. And you're right, there is a variance between individuals. But generally speaking, cutting carbs was easier for people to stick to than cutting, let's say, calories from fat. It just killed their appetite more.
Yeah.
Last is static stretching for gains. Static stretching for gains. This is, again, bodybuilders have done this for a long time. And there is some data that supports this. There's other data that doesn't support it. But I believe that stretching, deep, painful static stretching at the end of a workout of the target muscle, the one you just trained, like you do this on your quads, like you just work out your quads, they're super pumped. Go sit, go kneel on the floor and lay back and just stretch the hell out of your quads. Now, the way bodybuilders will explain this is it stretches the fascia. I don't know about all of that, but I do know when I do this, I do tend to get, first off, coming out of the static stretch, the pump gets more intense, which is interesting, but I do notice better gains. My clients have had better gains. Bodybuilders have talked this for a long time. I also think it's a great thing to do at the end of your workout to induce parasympathetic state anyway.
I think that's a big part of it is just getting into parasympathetic state and the recovery process starts earlier, which then you have more chance of really recovering and like rebuilding and starting that whole engine. But still too, there's gotta be something circulatory wise too, that we're getting blood flow. And again, this all feeds into the recovery.
And that mechanical stress that's happening.
And again, the downstream effects of this, right? So all of us have obviously trained and overreached and been really sore. And I tell you what, when you crush legs or train and overreach to the point of where it's like sore of the touch, like you don't want to move.
Yeah.
And one of the things,
limits movement.
Yes, it limits movement for the rest of the day because you're just like, oh, yeah, everything's like, but you get stretched out, and boy, does that really alleviate a lot of that. Yep. And now that's just going to promote me moving more all day long. So again,
contributes to better behaviors,
better movement, better blood flow, circulation, faster recovery, more mm-hmm. calorie burn. I mean, there's a whole host of downstream effects to that I think that maybe these individual studies that we try and use mm-hmm. to prove is it helping for building muscle or not. It's like, it doesn't tell the whole story. Mm-hmm. And so again, maybe we didn't communicate this the best on the benefits of it, but there's obviously a bunch of other things that you get from it that I think are worth it.
Yeah, I love it. All right. Speaking of studies, I gotta talk about a supplement, and it's not creatine. I know creatine's the king, right? When it comes to muscle gain and health and longevity, and it is. It's in a category on its own when it comes to supplements, but there is a second place when it comes to muscle building. I'm referring to HMB. And HMB is second place because it's probably the second most studied supplement there is. Creatine being first, HMB being second. It's so many studies on HMB. Now, its effects are not like creatine, so you're not gonna notice as pronounced of an effect. But the studies on HMB are really interesting. And I actually saved a bunch of them. I don't know if you know this, but HMB is being administered to, or it's being included in like care homes where they're putting it in the replacement shakes for people who are older.
Well, you also, if the audience doesn't know, when you recommended supplements for our GLP-1 group, I knew HMB was on the list that you highly recommended. Also, doesn't surprise me because I know Mike over at Legion has created an HMB product, and that guy doesn't put out anything if he doesn't have a bunch of science to support mm-hmm. what he's doing. So makes sense that's why he's in that. So what is it? I'm not as familiar with HMB as
so it's
am.
A metabolite of leucine. And so leucine is one of the amino acids that triggers muscle growth more than others. And it's probably because high leucine content lets the body know a high quality protein has come into the body. So if you look like animal proteins versus plant proteins, animal proteins are more bioavailable. That's important. And the other one is they tend to be higher in the branched amino acids, in particular leucine. And leucine is highest in these high quality proteins. And it signals things like mTOR, which is a signaler of muscle growth. HMB is a metabolite of leucine that seems to be more effective than leucine is at doing this. Now, here's what's interesting with some of these studies. When you look at studies on like older individuals, by the way, if you're let's say over 50, creatine is even more important for you, but HMB is a close second. And in studies with HMB, I found a study comparing HMB to high protein for preserving lean body mass in non-training older individuals. So these are older people not working out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What can I take to prevent muscle loss? And I found studies compared high protein diet and not working out to just taking HMB and not working out.
So I was going to ask
you. HMB was better.
Really?
Was better.
Okay, so that was my follow-up question was, in the context of somebody who eats a very high protein diet already, is it still got value?
Yes, it does. Wow. It does still have value.
Because I knew obviously that was what I thought was the main reason
so why
you recommended it for the GLP-1 group mm-hmm. is like, we know that one of the hardest things
it's not better than high protein when you're strength training. Strength training, high protein while strength training is the best. But it is something you can add to get some benefit.
But it's still, even with high protein,
on top of it
still gives benefit. It's a not like, bit like some things are like, we even found out branched amino acids still have some benefits too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that was something that I was under the impression that if you were in a high protein diet, it was no longer beneficial. But now we have research to support both those, right?
Probably because the upper limit of benefit for protein may be higher than we thought. And so essential amino acids helps do that without taking in all this extra protein. But HMB is an easy supplement to take. It's anti-catabolic. I think it's extremely valuable for aging population, but especially for people on a calorie-restricted diet to prevent muscle loss. And that's what I'm finding in some of the latest studies. And there's a lot of studies on HMB, and it shows like for preventing for anti-catabolic effects, it's extremely powerful. It's good for hypertrophy. There seems to be some fat loss effects, which are kind of like the, you know, because of the muscle building effect.
Yeah.
So HMB is one of those, and it's been around for a long time. But again, you want to find literature supporting a muscle building supplement. Creatine King, second place is HMB. I mean, there's literally probably 1,000 studies on HMB. And it's and it's inexpensive. It used to be expensive. I remember when it was expensive. I remember when back in the day, like it was like, man, I'm breaking the bank trying to take, you know, this on a regular basis. But now it's gotten to the point where you could buy it and it's a
inexpensive. I wasn't even familiar with it until you brought it up for a GOP group. So
What's the dosage look like?
You, 3 grams a day.
So low like creatine then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, 3 grams a day. So you can
any benefits going beyond that?
Speculation, but that's not what the data shows.
Okay.
Yeah, data shows. So like Legion's is 3 grams once a day. You could take it up to three times a day. Sorry, 12 grams a day. Some bodybuilders will take, but you could just take it once a day as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. But especially when you're dieting, I would say it's beneficial. I've played with it so many times. Here's the deal with muscle building supplements. They usually don't do anything. You'll notice creatine. HMB is more subtle than creatine. So don't expect this, like, you know, with creatine, you take it. Typically a week later, you're adding 5 pounds to your lifts. Like you could tell HMB is one of those ones that you'd have to take for a few months.
Yeah. It would be one of those things that would have been fun to have experimented while I was on all the different cuts.
While cutting.
Yeah. To see, cause I was very methodical, consistent. I always tracked body fat percentage before and after a show. So I could see like, was I dieting too extreme?
It might be a great supplement too, when you're sick. So it's like or injured. Right. Because a lot of the studies on HMB have been done on untrained individuals who aren't working out. And so I think like you're hurt. Oh, I can't go to the gym. How can I prevent some muscle loss? Or I'm sick. What can I take to prevent some muscle loss? HMB shines. It's actually incredibly anti-catabolic in comparison to, you know, to those other supplements. So it's kind of cool. More cool studies. I found a compilation of free weight versus machine studies on muscle growth, function, athletic performance.
Like pitting them against each other?
Pitting them against each other.
Wow.
Yeah. Which, you know what's interesting about this? What's annoying?
It's predictable.
I've heard people bring up the studies on machines before and say, builds the same amount of muscle as free weights. Like there's no, you know, bodybuilders will say this, right? Yeah. Or the bros, the Instagram bros, will hear us touting free weights.
Yep.
And they'll say, machines build just as much muscle. There's no benefit. You know, the problem with these studies, which by the way, I'll go through all these studies and I found meta-analysis and everything. When it comes to muscle growth, it is similar. That's true. But remember, these are 8 to 12 week studies.
Yeah.
The learning curve and technique with free weights is longer. You could take somebody and they could do a leg press fine the second time they use it. It's going to take me weeks to get them really good at a squat. I'd like to see these studies stretched out over a year. See who's going to build more muscle. And the free weights are going to crush.
Yeah.
When it comes to fat loss, free weights are better. And then where they really kick ass is in athletics. They make you faster. They make you jump higher. Machines, not nearly as much. Well, not nearly as much.
Yeah, because, I mean, a lot of them are single joint, you know, if we're talking about the machines. And then it's, you know, to be able to organize all your muscle groups to create a movement at once, it's like it creates a dysfunction more than anything.
Yeah. Now, the one area that machines might actually be better is in isolation exercises, which, that's exactly why I would recommend them. Is to isolate.
And that's why you would
supporting and rehabilitation.
It's like they all are tools. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah. So
I was Katrina and I play this. I think it's called Table Conversations. I get asked every time I bring it up or talk about it. I'm pretty sure it's called Table Conversations. It's a little stack of these cards.
Oh, Table Topics.
Yeah, I think that's what it's called. Yeah, yeah. We love them. We always.
It's just the two of you?
Yeah.
Really?
All the time. It's like one of our favorite things to do when, like, you know, if her and I try and do this, right? Like, if we become aware that we're getting in this bad habit of like Netflix and chill every night. you know, for a while. Like, I'll totally let myself do that because it's like, hey, why not? I enjoy it. We love movies. It's one of our favorite things to do together. But we find like we're doing that all the time, like consistently. Like, we'll interrupt it with like, let's no TV tonight. And we'll just like sit in the room and we'll talk, you know, and stuff like that. And those are always just fun. And we've been together 15 years. And those conversations, we always land on one or two that are just like, oh, wow, I didn't, you know, I wouldn't have thought you would have answered that, or I didn't know that about your childhood, or like, so it always gets that out of it. So we always have a blast doing that. Anyways, we were doing them the other night, and so I was like writing down, and I was like, I'm going to make sure I ask some of the guys because these are just like some funny questions. And the one that came to mind for Justin was, Justin, if you were...
Why Justin? I can't wait to hear this.
It's probably specific.
Justin, if you were a WWE wrestler, okay, what would your come out song be?
Wow, that's a deep question. I gotta pick a music call out song.
Yeah, I mean, you're coming
out. Probably like my PR. I don't know. I had thought about that for like if I was coming out for like a fight or something.
You've already thought of that?
Yeah.
Is it Limp Bizkit?
No, I wanted to go like heavier because I know a lot of the mainstream doesn't like, they can't handle it. So I kind of want to irritate them.
Wait, hold on. Is this like a common, because I've thought about that too, if I'm coming out to a fight. Is that like a common guy thing?
Probably.
Where guys at home are just thinking.
Like, yesterday don't mean shit. It would be a good one I'd like from
Yesterday
Pantera.
Don't mean shit?
Yeah.
Who sings that?
Pantera.
Oh, Pantera. Oh,
that's a great song.
That's an amazing song.
Now I
what was
hear
yours?
That wasn't a question asked by me. That was a question I saw, and I was like, oh, I got to ask Justin.
Well, I want to know what yours is.
What would I be if I was a WWE wrestler? What would I come out to? You know what? I don't know. I would maybe, I would probably come out to a Rage song. I mean, I like Rage.
Yeah, that'd be
cool. Like, Rage is pretty, you know, fuck you. I won't do what you tell me. What's that? What is that? What's the name of that song?
Oh.
I think
something in the name of
killing in the name of
yeah.
You want to know what's funny? I would play that in my gym when I train clients, and when that line would come on, my clients would laugh because they would like, I'm not going to do what you tell me because I would tell them to do more.
I would have probably said Tool too, because Tool is another one that I love to. That's a staple song for me to work out to, gets me going on with that. Only I have this crazy memory, and when I was in my 20s. That I went to the Pink Poodle and a stripper came out. She came out to all the Tool songs.
And that happened with the Deftones for me.
Really?
Yeah. Shove it. Shove it.
Wow. So, I mean, so it just killed it for me. It's like one of those weird things that's burned in my head forever. Just because I remember with my buddies, I'm like,
does that place even exist anymore?
I don't know. See, look it up, Doug.
That was the most.
I believe it does.
Oh, Doug.
Doug, real quick.
Oh, like,
that's my 18th birthday.
To defend myself, I drive by it sometimes.
Oh, okay. So that's
that. Bro, that was a janky.
That direction. Okay, here's one for you, Sal.
Not the best picks there.
If you were, if a movie, okay, were to represent your life, what genre of movie would you be?
Genre?
Yeah. What genre?
Oh, I don't know.
Would you be a comedy, a drama? Would you be a suspense? Would you be
probably a drama?
A sitcom?
Rom-com.
Would you be a rom-com? You would be a rom-com. That's a good one. You would be a rom-com.
That's ridiculous.
What would you be?
I don't know. That's weird. I never heard of that. I mean, I never thought of that. I don't know. I was stuck on the song right now. I was thinking of...
You thought I was going to ask you guys all the same ones?
I know. I was thinking of that...
did you come up with a song?
You know what I just thought of was the montage music from Rocky IV.
Yeah.
Because you played in Vegas to try and get me psyched up for speaking.
Rocky,
do that.
Yeah, Rocky's in my...
Don't ever play that. You're going to give me oversight.
Yeah. No. That would probably be what yours... Give me your movie. And then Justin, you can give me your movie after.
It'd probably be a drama. It'd be like... I don't know.
To what? Like, describe your life?
So, a movie is made about you in your life.
And
what genre does it fall under?
It's like a dark comedy.
Horror.
Horror, oh my God. Yeah.
No. I think we should, let Doug name what everybody's would be.
Yeah, I think
what would you put Justin's? What would you put Sal's? What would you put mine under?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
If Justin's life was a movie?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd probably have to go with sci-fi with him.
Oh, see, that's good.
Yeah.
He gets the cool one.
Yes.
Yeah, Adam would be Fast and Furious or something like
that. Yeah. Action.
Action.
I'm cool with that. Sounds a rom-com.
Probably.
How about this one?
Sounds Geely. What's that with Ben Affleck?
Terrible. Terrible movie.
Here's one that everybody can think of. Think of a trend, like like clothing wise or anything like that, that you did at one point in your life that you wish like you like, oh, I shouldn't have done.
Easy.
Okay.
Easy.
Oh, you know that one.
Right? Easy, bro. Overalls with one down.
Oh, those are cool, bro. They're coming back. Man. Overalls are back in style.
Yeah, but one down. Oh, man.
That was dumb, dude.
That was LL Cool J, right? Remember LL Cool J used to roll up one side of his pant leg too, like that for a while?
And then the crisscross where you wear them backwards.
Did you ever wear your clothes backwards?
No, my friends did, though. I had two friends that did, and they tried to get me to do it. No, I was like, nah. But mine was embarrassing. It was like very California, like surfer. Like I used to wear these hats that you'd flip up.
Oh, and we talked about this. In the front?
I would hairspray like a wave of my hair to go along the
that was
brim
the,
of my
that's
bill.
What came up to mind for me.
Yeah, and then I had like I had these really dorky like high shorts that were like fluorescent colored, and then like a fluorescent gotcha shirt. You know? It was like neon.
Spot on right there. I had the hat was like this with the hair sprayed like this, you know, like the like a wave or whatever like that. Uh-huh. And then bright pink and blue and neon, like bright neon colors. Yeah. Like just
and the Zubaz pants. That was another phase I went through.
Yes.
With the Hamsi Hammer, like the puffy pants.
Yes.
I had fish bones pants.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember those.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's embarrassing. Doug, what about you?
I went full Miami Vice.
Did you?
Like all white? All white. Yeah. No socks. You know? I actually have a picture somewhere.
Oh, you do?
I gotta find
what year?
Drew, 1980. Drew from Organifi. Early 80s.
Drew would have approved from Organifi.
Totally. I was totally Drew.
Hey, you know what would be fun, talking about this topic, is it like throw like a party at one of our houses and then you come as like one of your worst trends.
I don't even know I can find those clothes.
Oh, you probably could.
Yeah,
sure. A lot of stuff is getting recycled.
I mean, some of the funniest pictures I have are when I was so young that my mom dressed me. But whenever I'm in pictures with other kids, I play this game. Find the ethnic kid. That was me. My mom put me in. Oh, bro, I'd be 3 years old playing, you know, with other kids, you know, or 4 years old or 5 years old in school. And I'd have a gold chain with a big crucifix on it. And I just came off the boat. Like my mom dressed me like a stereotypical little Guido.
Okay.
You know?
Nice.
All right. Last one. This is like a feel good for everybody. So everybody can think about it really and everybody on a nice, like feel good. The last thing that comes to mind for you that, you know, put a real big smile on your face or gave you joy, like something that with a lot, just most recent thing. What's the most recent thing?
Easy for me.
Oh, let's hear it.
Yesterday was Father's Day.
Oh, okay.
And my daughter came and she brought me a pizza from a place I really like.
Because she knows you.
Yeah. And then we just spent the day together, went out for dinner, that's and then the we took a walk. It was just a great day to get
that's
together.
That's the best, dude. That's the best. Mine was my little girl, my 2.5-year-old. We were playing and she just looked at me and she goes, "Papa, I love you." And she just kissed me with this little baby kiss on my face. Yeah. And I just was, that was it. That was it.
What about you, Justin?
Well,
we all are cheating because we had Father's Day yesterday, and you didn't have your family. Like, so not fair. This is a harder one for Justin. We're all going to pull from yesterday, which is not. Right, I didn't.
Poor guy.
Nobody in my family said it. No,
it's fucked up. You guys. Yeah, like unfortunately, mine is going to be like, you know, related to my, like how my wife left before that. It was nice, you know.
Oh, I know. She had sex.
Yeah.
For anybody who's wondering what he's talking about.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, it was. I don't know. So you'll have to circle, but I don't like can't think of something very specific.
Yeah, I mean, it is a little unfair that we all literally just spent Father's Day yesterday. You're the only one that wasn't with his family on Father's Day, which was not fair and unusual.
Yeah,
so all three of us are pulling from yesterday. I should have thought of that when I asked that question. I should have said like before yesterday would have challenged everybody a little more.
Yeah,
because I would say the same thing too. My son, the video that Katrina made was really cool. The whole day was awesome. And exactly how. So first of all, she asked me before we left, she goes, "Hey, the whole family wants to get together for Father's," because it's tradition in her family that like on Father's Day, all the women come over and do all the
her
stuff.
Her family's like mine. Everything's all together.
Hitting 315 overhead. How about that?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
I was very happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your foot was wrong though.
And it wasn't push press.
Technically jerk bread.
No, I could see the joy in your face right after you got it completed. Yeah, Katrina's family very much so like yours. So of course she hits me right before we're about to take off, right? The day before, whatever. And I'm, you know, like you, I'm like, I don't know where I'm going to be and none of that stuff. Like, I'm so scatterbrained. And like, I've learned over time to be careful when she asks me questions like that, just to commit right away. And I'm like, I don't know. Hold on. Well, when are we going to get back? Cause I have no idea. When do we get back? This, that. She's like, oh, well, you get back on Saturday. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, what time? I'm inquiring to make sure before I commit to it. And she's like, oh, you get back late. I'm like, well, how late? You know, so like, you could tell she's setting me up to be like, yes, so I'll commit to it. And then I get home and realize like, that is not what I want to go do, is go get with all the family. And I find out we're not going to be home till 1 a.m. And I'm like, hell no, I don't want to. And she wanted us to host it. So I'm like, no, honey. I mean, for Father's Day, this is the one day I get to choose what I want to do. No, I don't want to go do the family traditional thing where we all get together and everything like that. I'm like, no, I want to sleep in. I want to see my son. I want to have a cup of coffee and stuff like that. And then that'll make my day. And I don't want to be like going anywhere. So it ended up being amazing because that's exactly what it was. It was just my family, the immediate family. And it was centered around that. And her and Max went over the top with gifts and things and stuff like that. But the best one was the video that she had made. And I got to ask her if it was sparked from what I asked her like 3 days before. I saw this dad. I told you guys this off air.
Yeah.
So this dad did this thing online with his daughter who just graduated from high school, and he recorded the first day of school every day of her life and just sat her down in a chair and was just like,
I love that video.
And it is so good. And I went, oh, this is so perfect because Max is about to start kindergarten, right? So he's officially starting that. And I'm like, let's make this commitment that we sit him down just the one day right before school and just, what do you want to be? Ask him a series of questions. It's real short and easy, and I'll keep it. And so we had just talked about that. So that must have been fresh in her head because she decides to sit him down and ask him a series of questions for for Father's Day. And actually what I think I liked the most about it was I was surprised by some of the answers. Like she asked him what I have taught him the most, and he said love. And I thought that was
really great.
I know that was great. I was not expecting that. You know, I would have expected that from his mother for sure. Although I do teach him a lot around that. Like I've told you guys that, you know, when I teach him about bullies and that, you know, if kids are mean to him at school, you can ask him, you guys can literally ask him on command, Max, if you meet a bully, how come they're mean or like that? And he'll tell you because their parents don't love them. And so he's absolutely
going to tell some kid.
Oh, 100%. I look forward to the day some bully's fucking with my kid and my kid doesn't even faze him and feel sorry for him and says, oh, man, it's too bad your mom and dad don't love you. And so so that's what he said back, and he did a bunch of other ones. I posted it online. I normally don't post that stuff, but it was so good.
Oh, I have another one. I have another one. We were out to dinner with some friends of ours, my friend Chuck and his wife, and I left to go to the bathroom, and I came back, and my wife didn't see me coming back, and I overheard her like bragging about me to them, which was really cool. When you hear, you know, you hear somebody talk
about
you.
That's the best way to find
out. And it's, you know, of course, a wife has so much power with her words for her husband. So to hear her talk about what she values in me and my critical thinking skills, and she went this whole thing, and I could overhear the conversation walking out.
Now, is that a man thing where like, and I've told Katrina this because Katrina is really good about saying a lot of nice things to me, but it's more powerful to me if it's done like that than just saying it to me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, I think that's for anybody, right? Because it seems so real.
See, no, I don't think so. Katrina wants to hear it. Like I always tell her all the time. Like I constantly brag about you, tell people about you.
Well, maybe you don't do it enough to her.
Well, yeah, I don't. I'm aware of that. That's what I'm saying. But that doesn't bother me. Like she could never say it to me. But if I hear her talking about me in that way, or someone says, "Oh man, Katrina says this about you," like that to me is like. That when I'm not around.
Feels like you mean it more somehow. I've experienced the same thing where Courtney was like on the phone with her friends or family or whatever and was like talking about me to them. And I was just like, she didn't know I was there. And it was like all real complimentary and like really hype. And it was like, oh, wow. Like, yeah, because I don't hear it directly. And so I think indirectly, I feel like it's like really how they think.
Yeah. I know for me with Katrina, like Katrina has this thing that her mom taught her, which is, I guess, cool and awesome, but also it causes this thing for me where it's just like, I don't hear that. Her mom has taught her since she was little, like, you don't advertise your man. And so like there's this like joke that's like all her friends think I'm like this loser guy, like, doesn't put it down, barely can provide, like all, like she does not like she has been trained,
she's kind of lays there,
like, yeah, she does not, she's been trained not to brag about her man. And so if I actually hear her doing that, that's like such a big deal for me, because that's a no-no for her. Is like she doesn't,
why don't advertise her that? Is it because
don't advertise your man, because
you don't want other women coming after him?
Her mom has taught her that other women,
that's crazy,
other women are like that, and that if you have this amazing man, like they will, yeah. And so that's like it trained.
That's some distrust right there, right? Yeah. Oh my god!
No shit.
You know, I heard someone say something the other day. Would love to know what you guys think about it. They said that the words "I love you" to a woman, the words "thank you" to a man are as powerful. So, like a wife wants to hear "I love you," a husband wants to hear
"thank you." That's probably,
you guys agree with that?
100%.
Yeah. I think so.
I don't, which is why I always have to work on it, because it's like the love language thing is like, because those like words of affirmation, I love you, you're pretty, all that. Like, I don't need none of that shit. Yeah. I don't need none of it. And therefore I'm really bad about doing it. And I have to actively practice that. You know what I'm saying?
Because you're like thinking, you're connecting yourself. Like,
the respect thing is everything for me. Yeah. I actually, even less than hearing something, it's more that, I'll tell you what, I always try and tell Katrina when I catch her doing something like this, when she gives me grace or latitude, like I know I can be a bear. I know that I can be distracted. I know that.
That's huge.
Yeah,
that's huge.
I know that I can be an asshole at sometimes. I know I can be that guy, like 100%. And when it's in that moment, her not reacting to me being that way and staying calm amongst the storm, I'm aware of it. And that I see, and I'm like, I mean, and I don't always try and say something to her afterwards, like, hey, I appreciate that you didn't react to me like that, or you let me just
vent.
Because sometimes I just need that, man. For me, like that's, I like that even more than any compliment, any thank you, any I love you, anything like that, is like, allow me a little bit of grace
That reminds me of another statement I heard, which was that couples don't fall out of love, they fall out of forgiveness, or they fall out of grace. So little by little, they stop giving each other grace, and then that's what causes the destruction of a relationship. I thought that was interesting.
No,
that's very true.
Yeah.
No, I agree with that. I definitely agree. Because what's it? Remember, the Gottman said the number one thing for divorce is what? Resentment or contempt?
Yeah, yeah.
Contempt.
Yeah.
And that would be the opposite of grace, right? Mm-hmm. The opposite of grace would be contentment, I would think.
Contempt,
right? It's like you, everything they do.
Hold them to all these things like in the past.
Yeah.
And never let it go.
Yeah.
There's a whole myth that's like an equal 50-50. No, it's not. Sometimes it's 70-30. Sometimes it's 60-40.
It's 90-10. It's all over the place, dude.
It's all over the
place. Other great advice that I've also heard too is like this attitude of like ever even paying attention, like it's irrelevant. It's always, I'm on a mission. Okay. You're 15 years in. I'm on a mission this year, right? It's like the New Year's resolution goal is like, can I love my partner more than I loved her last year?
Right.
Irregardless of what she does.
Regardless.
Yeah.
Sorry, Doug.
It's all right. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it's not word.
He's told this before.
Yeah, hey, irregardless is not a word.
No, it's not.
I remember a comedian.
it totally feels like it should be a word.
It should be a word.
Irregardless.
I think Doug said that to us a few times.
Has he?
Yeah.
He doesn't do it enough. I appreciate. I like when you do.
I
that.
Bite my tongue.
That's how I learn. You know what I'm saying?
Look at the grace.
You know. Hey, you know why? Hey, you know I've probably said it a bunch of times because fucking Doug doesn't speak up until after the podcast.
I'm sorry, Doug. Yeah. I just flipped it on you.
Yeah. It's like after the podcast, Doug loves to let me know. I'm like, motherfucker, call me out on it when I do it. That's how I learned. Like, I probably won't do it now because you stop me in it.
I don't want to be that guy either.
You can be that. You've earned the right to be that guy with me. Other people can't do that, but you can do that.
To love her more.
Yeah. And if you focus just on that, then it's amazing what will end up happy on the other end. And if it doesn't, then that to me, that's always meant to be. You guys aren't meant to be, right? You're not. If you have a partner that, if you continue to level up on taking care of loving that person more and more and more as you age and you're with that person, the right person should not only reciprocate that, right? Which is a word, right, Doug?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, it's correct. Very good.
Irreciprocate. Sorry. Hey, we brought up Drew earlier. I wanted to talk about his company, Organifi. The reviews and the messages that we get on the Shilajit are pretty damn good. But I've also had other people comment that they've tried Shilajit and it didn't do anything for them. And I got to say this, that the quality control on Shilajit in the market in general is terrible.
Yeah. You gotta get the right version.
You gotta get the Himalayan, like it is sourced from where you get Shilajit, because they can make it in a lab. They can also get it from other places, and it does not have the same effect whatsoever. The Himalayan source, like Prima V Shilajit,
you should be able to feel the impact.
That's what Organifi uses. That's the legit real deal. The stuff that Ayurvedic is in Ayurvedic medicine.
Do you think that has to do, Sal, with the aging process of it that makes it so special?
It's been there for a long time, hundreds of thousands of years.
Condensed like micronutrients and everything else.
But they'll make it in labs now and sell it in capsule form, and just because now it's a trendy thing.
I wonder if it's a similar like fermentation process is like what wine goes through with that. Wine ages and makes it better and so that as it ages, like the
I don't know. No. Yeah. Doesn't wine go bad eventually, or is that false?
Oh, it will go bad, yeah.
Eventually, right?
It has a sweet spot, right?
Always. Yeah, it really depends on the vintage, I guess. I'm not an expert.
What's the most expensive wine you've ever had? You've probably had some of the most expensive.
I was at a wine guy bar, and this guy bought a $700 bottle of wine.
I don't think I've had over $500.
Yeah.
Was it good?
You know what? I wasn't that impressed.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah, he was kind of like showing off. So I go, sure, I'll have some of your wine. I think
that's what you do when you're at the bar and you get the expensive. Yeah. You've tried $500?
Yeah.
Was it worth it?
Yeah. I mean, it was good. Katrina's family's really into wine. Like, they were winemakers, right? So
they're winemakers?
Yeah.
You didn't know that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Troy, they were in it for a long time. It's a hard industry to crack and make money. There was a point where their bottle was sold for $250 or $350 a bottle at Forbes Mill.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, in Los Gatos.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So he was, but just can't. What's that old wine saying? There's a wine saying that make $2 million a year so you can make $1 million in wine or something. Yeah, I forget how it goes, but it's basically...
Like rich people do it for fun.
Yeah, yeah. It's like there's no money in it and you need to have a lot of money to make any money making wine. I forget how the exact saying goes, but that's pretty
much... Yeah, every time I go wine tasting, here's what I notice. The longer the wine tasting goes on, the better the wine tastes. That's what I noticed. Like, yeah, well, now I like it. Yeah, well, after visiting two places, it's delicious.
They had great... In fact, they still... So in their family... They put away a bunch of the family stuff. They haven't, since Troy's passed, they haven't made wine again, but they're still like, it's gold in the family. Like we have, I think one bottle still of their wine, and it's really, really, really good wine.
I got to tell you guys about this.
Did you find that saying, Doug?
Yeah. If you want to make a small fortune in wine, start with a big one.
That's it. There it is. Right there.
That's a good one.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. I saw this meme. I guess it's a meme floating on social media. It's going viral. It's totally sending the wrong message. So this guy, he put on a mask. Then he took the kind we were, encouraged to wear during COVID, right? Yeah.
The useless one.
Medical mask. Yeah. And he took a Petri dish. And he would speak into it. And then he did another one where he would speak into it. And then he showed the difference, right? And so the Petri disc without the mask showed like a bunch of overgrowth. The other one showed none. So he's like, see, mask totally works.
Totally works.
And what's annoying to me is that people are sharing it, saying, mask worked. It worked. I'm like, Petri discs grow bacteria.
It's bacteria.
That's not viruses. That's
not virus.
That's bacteria.
Different molecule.
Yeah. Viruses are
way
tiny,
smaller
tiny,
molecule.
Way smaller.
Yeah.
Than bacteria. That's not what you're showing is bacteria, which is duh, but it's not a virus.
Which is why, I mean,
is why they wear it in hospitals.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah. The surgical setting, and you're trying to keep everything like super clean and sanitized, like, for bacteria,
but not virus.
Anti-sterile, but not for viruses.
No, but also the training involved with like how you handle it and put it on. Like nurses go through legit training around that.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody that did that before they were
About all that forever.
So dude. if it's only good for sanitary reasons and bacteria then like that. So then a lot of the people that are continuing to wear it on planes and stuff like that are silly too, because a virus is going to get through that. Someone has a cold or sickness.
Yeah, virus will get through that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, airborne stuff.
So then it's literally ridiculous.
They're just blocking their own bacteria and like they're breathing their own bacteria.
I think that a lot of people were a bit traumatized. I also think that for some people, and I saw this with kids, they like to cover their face. They don't want people to see them.
Well, that makes sense. That makes sense for teenagers. There's a trend. There was a trend before that. That where kids wear their hoodies all.
But you still see when you fly, you still see people wearing.
Well, that's why I just asked you guys. We just flew right now. There was at least five people on the plane that had that mask on. Now I assume that they're like, oh man, maybe there's people that are cold and have a sick, and it's like,
they never let it go. I mean, because there's a new variant out, right? And so I think everybody just started to put them back on. They never really, I don't know, adopted any new information. They just kept going with the thing.
Yeah.
Or they just didn't. I mean, that's why I think what you just brought up is really interesting. I've never heard anyone explain that. I didn't know that there was a difference between like that bacteria.
Bacteria is way bigger than viruses.
Yeah.
Viruses are tiny.
Yeah.
Tiny.
Yeah. So then the fact you wear it on a plane, like, and you're trying to not get sick from somebody else's cough right next to you, it's not going to
save. Yeah, unless they spit on your face, so you're not going to get the spit on you. But holy cow, that happens.
I mean, that's what.
Yeah, what kind of person are you talking to?
Hey, man.
Dude, that's my kid. Dude, that is my kid. We tell him not to cough or cover your mouth, and sometimes he thinks it's funny. When he sneezes, he'll come up and right on my arm. I'm like, oh, come on, buddy. Don't do that. His mom gets so mad.
That's funny.
Brain FM is engineered music and sounds. It sounds like music, but there's sounds beneath the music that induce different states of mind. This is backed by data and studies. In other words, you listen to their focus, your brain becomes more focused. Listen to meditate, you get more meditative. You listen to sleep and you want to go to sleep. It really works. Don't believe me? Try it out for yourself. Go to brain.fm/mindpump. Get 30 days for free. Test it out for 10 minutes. You'll see what I'm talking about. Back to the show.
First question is from House of Fitness. People are always talking about having trouble connecting with their glutes, but I have a bigger problem connecting with my pecs. Any recommendation?
Yeah, there's a couple things you can do.
Yep, very similar.
First off, understand the function of the chest, okay, of the pecs. So the function of the pecs is known as horizontal adduction of the humerus. So in other words, the upper arm, right, the bone of the upper arm, when you bring your elbow up, the pecs bring that part of your arm closer to midline or center. So anytime you do a press, focus on that part of the movement, bringing my arms closer together, my upper arms closer together. So when you're doing your chest presses, think of that as you do the exercise and try to feel the pecs be engaged more. The second thing you could do is pre-exhaust, which is funny because we talked about at the beginning of the episode, where you do some light flies before you go into your presses and then go into your presses. Now, one of the biggest mistakes I see people making with this is that they just go too heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're going so heavy, they're relying on where they're already strong, which tends to be, for people like this, shoulders. And triceps.
Yeah. Well, I'll add to that. The other reason is because you could understand the mechanics, right, of the adduction of the humerus. But if you are protracting the shoulder girdle forward as you do that.
Rolling them forward.
Yes. Right. If you roll the shoulders forward when you do that, you get a lot of delt activity and not a lot of chest activity. Mm-hmm. And so the ability to be able to retract and depress the shoulders
and keep
them in that position as you come forward is the key to that. There's a huge difference. I'll take somebody and have them do, basically the fly with their arms just naturally. And I can always tell. And then I take them, start over, retract and hold, and then I'll hold their shoulder. And I say, now do that, but I'm going to keep your shoulders in that position. And then you can't help but feel your chest flex. Another movement I love to do with somebody to help get them to feel this is I used to love putting them on a foam roll down their spine.
Mm.
So they lay on.
You ever use the half foam roll for that?
Yeah,
or the full?
Okay. Yeah. Either one would work fine. If whatever you have access to, a half foam roll is nice because then you're going to roll off, right? But even a regular one's fine. Yeah. But you do a foam roll down so supporting your head and down your spine, all right? And you lay down.
Just naturally can fall.
Exactly.
Further.
And what it does is it allows the shoulder girdle to drop back and down naturally. Just gravity will make it roll on the other side of it. And it's kind of, and then I used to love to take a client and just do a real light dumbbell fly on that position. And then we get over and we do like bench press and things like that. That would really help them activate.
Yeah. The other thing too, is focus on the stretch portion of certain exercises, that tends to help with hypertrophy. So with presses, it's hard to get a stretch unless you use dumbbells. Flies, like focus on that stretch part of the lift and try and feel the stretch in your pecs.
Try and feel the stretch in that initial bit here where you're resisting, and then also too in the squeeze. Yeah. But really hold it isometrically and add in effort. So add in that extra bit of tension that you can create yourself. Go really slow with it and just take that extra time to feel it as much as possible.
Next question is from Corey Francois. When getting home late, is it better to go to bed as soon as possible and get good sleep, or eat a late night meal and hit protein?
I mean, all things being equal, sleep. Yeah. Sleep is going to be more important.
It's your biggest mover.
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be cases where, you know, I might advise somebody to eat.
It's going to be the client who's really struggles eating protein all the time.
Yeah. Like always.
Always. Yeah.
Like, and so, I'd like take a shake or something. Yeah. Like that.
They get pretty good sleep already.
This is a no brainer answer depending on the client. And I'm, even though not everybody fits cleanly into two categories, but there's two total different people that I would advise that way. So you can decide, whoever's listening, what category you fall to. Are you the person that chronically doesn't get good sleep and you're inconsistent about it, but you have no problem hitting your protein intake? And so here you are, you get nailed with this night and you're like, oh shit, today I'm going to miss my protein intake. No big deal. That person misses one time. Flip that. You're the person who has such a hard time hitting protein intake. You miss it all the time. And here's another night. Here's another night. You're getting home late and you're below on protein and you're like, oh shit, I need to hit my protein intake, but am I going to miss again? But then it's going to mess my sleep. I'm going to tell that person to hit their protein intake.
Yeah.
Because we're focusing on that. So it really depends on the client. Sleep wins in the if we're head-to-head race of what is more valuable in a day-by-day practice, right? Like one night of bad sleep is more detrimental than one day of missing protein intake.
Totally.
But if you are a client who chronically misses protein intake and here's just another day that you're going to miss it because you now you just because you got home late, I'm trying to create those good behaviors around that person. And, you know, one night of sleep is like, whatever, we'll get better.
Right? I mean, it's funny because this one I mess up all the time because I'll get home late sometimes, like especially if we're traveling for the show and I'll be hungry and I'll be okay, I'll just eat real quick. And I always regret it because my sleep is not as good and it would have been better to focus on sleep. So I get this, but I'd say, generally speaking, like get the sleep and wake up the next day and then try to hit your protein.
Next question is from Emmett MH. I've injured myself a few times outside of the gym, especially my lower back, and it's limiting the exercises I can do. What's the best way to safely build those muscles back to where they should be and to keep progressing in other areas while I do?
So to build the rest of the body while not stressing the back that's injured? The low back that's injured. I mean, you could do seated exercises, unilateral exercises,
supported
exercises are a great way to do that.
That's where machines are great.
Yeah, machines would be great. Any chest supported rows, things like that, you know, that you can put in place. So it's just like, you don't want to add a lot of unnecessary stability that your body has to react to.
Yeah. Now that being said, like if you keep hurting your low back, there's something going on there. Like you want to pay attention to what's happening. Suitcase carriers are a really great way to build stability in the back, strengthen your core properly, strengthen your obliques properly, and then do, you know, things like back extensions and get good at things like deadlifts. But that lateral stability and rotational stuff tends to be an issue when you see these repeated low back injuries, often, especially if you're working out. Actually, let me preface that. People who work out a lot who also often hurt their back. It's like, why do I keep hurting my back?
Yeah.
Typically, there's a lateral.
Too much in the sagittal plane.
Yeah, and suitcase carries are really good for that. So are even old school side bends can sometimes be good, to strengthen the lateral side of the spine.
I think like being real specific instruction for this specific client, I would say while we're healing from the injury, I'm going to do all machine work and wait for you to fully heal. Then once you heal, I'm running like a MAP performance or a MAP symmetry program with you.
Yeah.
You just need it.
Yep.
It's if you've injured your low back multiple times, and to your point, if you are someone who lifts consistently, then there's definitely something lacking in your programming that's not bulletproofing your low back. And so, great programs that we have that are for that, mass performance, MAP symmetry. But right now, I wouldn't put you in that because it's compromised. Yeah. So get better, get healed. Just do machine work, you know, just until you get healed, and then when you get back,
mobility and core strength. Yep. Yeah.
Next question is from Shamonk 7. Should I use squat shoes to improve my range of motion in squats?
Yeah, you can. Ideally, though, you'd want to fix. Here's the deal. You can use squat shoes, but simultaneously work on your ankle mobility so that you don't need squat shoes.
This is pointing to, definitely an instability there, some kind of limitation with the ankle.
It is. And now the people that wear squat shoes all the time to squat, Olympic lifters, why? Because they use them in competition. But you want to be able to do this with your foot flat, ideally with your foot barefoot. Now, I don't want to say that lightly. Most people can't. Most people don't have the stability and strength in their foot or the mobility in their ankle to do so. So it is a slow process. What you don't want to do is if you're listening to this and you always use squat shoes, you're like, cool, I heard this on Mind Pump. What I'm going to do is now go train barefoot and you go the same weight that you normally do and you just try and push it, you're going to hurt yourself because it requires a whole nother, it's a different technique and requires different stability and strength. So ideally you want to be able to do this with a flat foot, but you can do it at the same time. You can work on ankle mobility while squatting with squat shoes.
I did. I mean, when I went through my big kick on mobility and in particular ankle mobility, I was using squat shoes because I wanted to promote greater depths in my squat and keep working on that, simultaneously understanding that the limiting factor was my ankle mobility and just kept continuing to press. And that's exactly what it looked like. It looked like me squatting with squat shoes for the time being because that allowed me to still get in a pretty deep squat while I was doing ankle mobility, and eventually got to a place where I could barefoot deep squats. And so you can absolutely, what you don't want to do is use the squat shoes as a crutch and then never address the reason why you can't do that. Like that's where that doesn't make
sense.
You
find yourself at the beach or something or with flat shoes on.
Yeah.
And you end up hurting yourself.
Super vulnerable.
Because the foot, I mean, the foot is covered in muscles and the ankle is a joint. Mm-hmm. And you compensate for those, then that's how you develop a bunch of strength, is with those being compensated for. And that can set you up for issues when you don't have the shoes on. Yep. So look, if you like the show, come find us on Instagram. Justin is at Mind Pump Justin. I'm at Mind Pump DeStefano. Adam is at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.